Bored with Friends, episode 23, Venom Assault.
I mean, I'm not allowed to tell that story because Zach wants us to stay on topic.
Stay on topic.
All right, well, we got a little off topic.
Again, 40%.
I'm lazy and I'm a mooch. What I do?
This is not that kind of podcast.
Zach here with a quick announcement. If you live in the New England area, you may have heard of a convention called TotalCon in Marlborough, Massachusetts. Well, this convention is going to take place on February 23rd through 26th, and Bored with Friends is going to be there. We haven't finalized all the details yet, but the next episode is going to drop during that convention, so I wanted to make the announcement now. Most likely it's going to be me and Vanessa. We're still finalizing to see if Walt, Chad, and Sean, and Devin can go, but either way, if you want to meet up with us and play a few games, I would love to meet some listeners, and we're going to have a lot of fun. So if you live in the Massachusetts area, or Rhode Island, or Connecticut, you know, we live in Rhode Island, and you want to have some fun and play some games, check out TotalCon at their website and register and see if you can go. Now, on with the show.
Welcome to Bored with Friends, the podcast about hobby gaming and defending the world from evil organizations that try to enslave us. Right?
We do that now?
Yeah. Well, that's why we haven't put out an episode in like 2 months. You're welcome, people.
We've been fighting crime, and you people are so ungrateful for
anyway,
it.
Anyway.
I saved the world.
To protect the world from devastation.
I feel we deserve a Patreon account just
for
saving
Pokemon.
Ungrateful. I don't know. What's a PG word? I don't know any PG insults. Ever since the show's gone PG, I feel like my insults have like...
I feel like we were always supposed to be PG, and then nobody listened to it.
Yeah. But now people listen to it, so that's great, right?
No, I mean nobody listened to you.
Oh. Well, yeah, that's actually kind of true.
Like, we just swore.
You know how hard it was to edit you guys out and all the swearing you do?
You know what? I can...
Now that I've made you not swear, though, a lot less editing.
Yeah, well, I can imagine.
Yeah.
It's a podcast.
Anyway, hey, we're back! It's 2017, and the world didn't end yet. And I'm here with Sean Bissonnette.
Hey, Zach, it's great to be here. How are you doing today?
We missed you, man. You haven't been on like 2 episodes.
I was going to say something else and I forgot what it was.
I'm so glad I can make your mind go blank. And we're here by Walt Chad. Everybody remembers him. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, it's me. I don't really have anything clever to say this time, but I will say that I don't know what all anxiety means.
Anyway.
Oh. What I was going to say was, Zach, what have you been playing?
I was going to ask you the same thing.
Yeah, I mean.
Was anyone going to ask me?
No.
After we were done making prolonged eye contact, I would have done the same for you, yes.
Maybe. Well, thank you for asking, Sean.
You're welcome.
I've gotten a lot of gaming in. Some of it good. Some of it not so good.
Okay.
Mainly one that I wanted to bring up was over Christmas, I got to play a really old game. Something that was from my childhood that we didn't even talk about in the childhood episode that we did over a year ago.
Candyland.
1313 Dead End Drive.
That sounds familiar, but I don't think I've ever
You
played
may
it.
Have heard of 13 Dead End Drive. This was the reprint that came out about 15 years ago.
Okay.
All right.
Why did they add the extra 13?
I have no idea.
So it can be a
was
different
it a
game.
I don't know. They redid all the artwork from the original, and it's basically the same game. But it's a really cool game. It is a roll and move, so, you know, that's okay, though. Basically, you are all heirs to a fortune, and you are trying to get out the door with as much money as possible. And all of the money is, it starts off with, you know, one character has a ton of it, and a few have a little bit of money.
Okay.
And as you kill off characters, money goes down the chain.
You kill off characters?
Oh, yeah, you kill people. It's really, like, cartoony deaths, though.
No.
And the actual board. It's a giant board of a mansion, and there are death traps all over the mansion, kind of like Clue.
This sounds so familiar.
And basically, you're on your turn, you have air cards that you control, but no one knows who they are.
Mm-hmm.
No one knows who has who. And on your turn, you roll the dice, and you roll two dice, and you have a choice, which you can move anybody on the board, whether they're your heirs or somebody else's. Mm-hmm. And you can move them into traps, and once you move them onto a trap position, you get a card, a trap card. And it will allow you to trigger different traps. So you are playing this subtle game of trying not to let people know who you have, but also to try and figure out who they have, and also to kill heirs that will allow you to get more money, and then try to get out the door without people realizing it. Because as soon as they realize who you have, they will immediately, on their turn, move that heir as far away from the door as possible. It was actually a lot of fun. My cousin had brought it over for Christmas. We were going to play Codenames, but then I saw that she had that. I said, I haven't played that in years. We got to play this game. So we busted it out, set it all up. Board was really falling apart at this point. But it was a lot of fun. And the traps are neat. Like, there's a suit of armor that if you have somebody on it, you flick a little switch and the armor falls over and knocks them dead. There's a staircase that you got to get the person up to the top, and if you can set off that trap card, you flip a little lever and it sends them flying down the stairs. And then there's a fireplace that you can put them in, and then you have to turn around, they burn to death. There's a boar's head you can drop on people, all sorts of cool stuff. And it was just a blast of nostalgia, and I realized that this game actually was a really good game. Like, it wasn't just a roll and move. There was a lot of nuances to it.
I remember that.
I remember I looked up the picture of this game. I do remember this now.
I remember the box art for sure.
Okay. Yes, that's the original game, 13 Dead End Drive. The version that we played was 13 Dead End Drive.
I remember the commercial for this because of the ladder. The ladder and the chandelier, like the board moves and stuff.
The graphics are a little bit more cartoony.
The original was...
The original was a little bit more grimdark.
Oh, man, this looks so cool.
I would love to get another copy of this game. My cousin's copy, like I said, was a little beat up. But the game itself is really fun. I had a blast with it.
Nice.
Oh, man, this is so cool. I kind of want to find a copy of this, the original. Mm-hmm.
And that's 1313 Dead End Drive. Or 13 Dead End Drive if you have the original.
Nice.
So what have you been playing, Sean?
So I've played a couple of games, but two of them are really standing out to me. So the first one has been the game that we were talking a little bit about earlier, and that's Secret Hitler.
Woo!
Oh,
so very different game.
Yeah, very different game than 13 Dead End Drive. But Secret Hitler, essentially what happens, you need at least five people to really make it good. There are two different, essentially, factions. There are either there are liberals, and then there are fascists. So one person is Hitler. So everybody's dealt an envelope, and in there it says what faction you're a part of, and then you have a second card in there that it's just a picture of. There's one card that tells you if you're a liberal or a fascist, and there's a second card, and basically it'll either just be a picture of a random person, or if you're Hitler, It'll be a picture of a lizard in a SS uniform. It says Secret Hitler on it. Mm-hmm. So you can be Secret Hitler. What's going to happen is there's a little board in front of you. And there are it's half red, half blue. So for fascists and liberals, respectively. So every turn, going around in the circle, somebody gets to be the president. When you're a president, you can then nominate somebody else at the table to be the chancellor. Then everybody votes yes or no on if they want that person to be the chancellor. If the vote is yes, then what happens are, as the president, you take the top three tiles, and there will either be a liberal policy or a fascist policy. And the idea is, whatever your team is, you want to get five policies on the board. So that's the normal way to win the game. So obviously, let's say I draw two liberals and a fascist, and I'm a liberal, you would then take two of the three tiles that you drew, give them to the chancellor, and then the chancellor has to put one of those into action. So you can kind of manipulate it a little bit to either making people – because you basically have to try to figure out who Hitler is if you're a liberal. Because what's going to happen is one of a couple ways to win. If the liberals figure out who Hitler is and kill him, then they win. If the fascists elect Hitler to be the chancellor after three fascist policies have been approved, then Hitler wins. Or the first person to five policies passed wins. Or first political party, whatever. So really it's just a lot of arguing back and forth about who you think Hitler is, who the fascists are. So if you're obviously the fascists know who each other are. Hitler has no idea who the other fascists are. So I know that I'm rambling a little bit, but basically what happens is at the beginning of the game, everybody closes their eyes, and it's kind of like one night Ultimate Werewolf or Vampire. So it's like, all right, cool, fascists, open your eyes, look around, find all the other fascists. Hitler, give a thumbs up so that the fascists know who you are, put your thumb down, everybody open your eyes. So Hitler has no idea who's on his team, but the fascists know who Hitler is. So they're basically trying to get him elected chancellor, that way they can win.
That's interesting. You would think it would be the other way around, where like Hitler knows who the other fascists are.
Nope. But I agree. But
well, it's like in One Night Ultimate Werewolf, how the minion knows who the werewolves are, but the werewolf does not know who the minion is.
Exactly.
Interesting.
I know you haven't played that game.
I wonder why they chose that way. I wonder if it would make it too easy to win.
It would probably make it very easy.
Yeah, because if it's that many people working together, because it's the kind of thing where, like, let's say that I'm Hitler, Zach is a fascist, you're a liberal. Every time Zach's president, I'm just like, you know, you want to make me your chancellor. Like, come on.
Plus, it gives the fascists, like, a little bit of a who should I vote for kind of vibe, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, all right, like I saw Walt do this kind of voting, maybe he's Hitler.
And the other thing is, when you're the president, when you pass those two tiles over to anybody, you can't say anything. So you can't, like, defend yourself. Like, oh, man, there were only fascist tiles, so sorry about this voting, guys. When you're the president and you're giving the chancellor those tiles, you can say absolutely nothing. Hmm. They just have to put their thing in place. The chancellor can be like, well, I mean, they didn't give me an option. This was the only option I had. But the president isn't supposed to say anything. But that is Secret Hitler. It's a lot of fun. It's neat. I would definitely recommend trying it.
Yeah. I've heard of this game. I thought it was a lot goofier than it sounds based on what your description was.
Yeah.
It does sound like a lot of fun, though. It sounds like it's a social deduction game, but with a lot more to it.
Exactly.
Than, like, Resistance or One Night or whatever.
There are other, like, secondary and tertiary rules, like with the fascists. Once there's been three fascist things in place, the president can decide to kill somebody. So that's kind of how the liberals can try to kill Hitler and just end the game. But that's...
Well, not really, Walt. Calm down.
No, it's just like, I'm sorry. Like, wait, so we're trying to create this, like, perfect, like, liberal society, and they're offing people. Like, okay.
Well, it's the fascist cards that let you off people, but it is an opportunity for the liberals to try to eliminate Hitler.
Okay.
So, yeah, so that's Secret Hitler. Then also, I've been playing a DC deck building game,
ooh,
which I only played once, so I'm super basic on it. But, like, I've played Dominion. The game that we're going to review later in the episode is also a deck building game. Mm-hmm. So it's just like any other deck building game. There are a bunch of starter kits. The starter kit that he got was Teen Titans, because the Young Justice and Teen Titans are my roommate's favorite things in DC. So, and my brother bought a Watchmen expansion pack, and all I can say is the comedian's OP. It's not fair. Not fair at all. But
but he's dead.
Hey, well, you know, OP as heck. But it was a lot of fun. I definitely want to, for his birthday, my brother and I got him a bunch more expansions, so we're really...
Is it a cooperative game?
So it is cooperative. So basically what happens are there is one pile of supervillains. Yep. And when you're accumulating your power or resources, or just like in any deck building game, if you can have enough to buy or slash beat the villain, then they're really, really, really powerful cards that get added into your deck. Basically, the game is over when all the supervillain cards are gone. Whoever has the most victory points, just like in Dominion, every card, there's a little star in the corner. They all have a number 0 to something. I don't know what the max one is. But at the end of when all the supervillains are gone, you add up all your victory points, and then that's the ultimate winner. But you are working together except for that one facet. Basically, in every facet besides just deciding which first, second, third, fourth place, you are working together.
I never liked that in cooperative games when they're like, okay, everybody wins, but here's the most winning person.
Well, I feel that's in there just to kind of give. Like, you always have that one ultra competitive person is like, I have to, like, I want a game where I can win. Like, who's the real winner?
Yeah.
There actually is in the Venom Assault game that we're going to talk about later. There's a feature of that too. MVP of the thing. I didn't even bother bringing it up when we did it, but yeah. I mean, the DC deck builder, it's gotten some, like, people either really love it or hate it because, you know, they thought thematically it didn't work or whatever. But I've always wanted to try it because I like DC over Marvel. Sorry. I always just like the DC characters more, and I was excited to play a DC game. Looking at the artwork in it, though, it's a little disappointing because they just recycle art from
the comics
and stuff, which I guess is okay because there's billions probably of, you know, panels and stuff that they could take for all the characters. It just it disappoints me that they didn't do original art for the game.
Oh, I
don't know. Like, for someone that nitpicks a lot of things, and everyone knows if you've been following the show for the last year, I nitpick everything. I don't see that as a valid thing to say, because look at Battlestar Galactica.
I'm looking at it. It's not doing
anything.
I'm
trying to think of other board games based on shows. Rick and Morty.
No, I get why they did it. I mean, it's a cost-saving measure, and there's plenty of art for it.
Yeah,
I just
to
see original art.
In tons,
like,
of things, you just take images from something and put it on,
like,
there.
The same thing happened with DC Dice Masters, you know, when I opened it up. And all the other versions of Dice Masters, like, the art was reused, which it makes perfect sense financially for them to do that. But when I opened up DC Dice Masters for the first time, and I'm just like, yeah, I want to look at this, and, oh, well, it's that same cover from the New 52 Green Arrow. that I didn't like to begin with. Like, I wanted a more dynamic. Maybe I just didn't like their choices in some of the artwork. Like, they could have picked better cover art or whatever. Anyway, it's a small nitpick. It still might be a good game, so.
I like it. And then the nitpick you were saying with, like, punches and kicks are the basic power cards. It's like, well, this so-and-so doesn't punch or kick anybody. Like, if you're complaining about that, then you're being ridiculous.
Yeah, that's silly.
Like, it's...
I don't have an issue with that. I mean, it's they pick something that
is basic.
Match it with heroes and basic. Yeah,
exactly. But yeah, so those are the two games that I've played probably most recently that stand out the most to me.
Cool. Hey, Walt Chad, what have you been doing?
I have been doing a lot. Christmas was very good to me.
Aw, did Santa bring you everything you wanted?
He brought me everything I wanted. I ended up getting my favorite game of... I think I voted Battlestar Galactica my favorite game of last year.
I believe you did, yeah.
Okay, I ended up actually getting that. As well as I got to try a game, but not really, but I figured we'd talk about it because we tried it last week, or the week before, rather. Rick and Morty Total Recall.
Yes, we did try this.
I was so looking forward to this game because, as you guys know, I've been a big fan of Rick and Morty. Been dying to get my hands on two games, The Archer Love Letter, which I also got, and Rick and Morty Total Recall. Total Recall is a... You basically have a whole bunch of secret identities on the board that you can't tell their identity. These are characters from the show that are just random characters that are clearly obviously fake to anybody, but some of them are real. And you need to discover which ones are fake by playing cards that allow you to see the identity and sharing that information with everybody else. That's the standard game. It's very straightforward. It wasn't entirely engaging at all. It was very, like, just play until... It didn't hold that same... It didn't feel like Rick and Morty. You know, like, Archer Love Letter at least feels Archer, in at least in its flavor text. This really only had, like, the flavor text was all in, like, the instructions. And it was in, like, the quotes they had there. There's a lot of repeats of the cards, and they didn't even bother to come up with, like, different images. Like, that's my nitpick there. Like, you're talking about them reusing images over and over again. It's all just the same one image of Rick. Whereas, like, if you're just going to take pictures from the show, take different pictures of the show, you know? Like, have multiples. I guess it makes it easier for the eye for you to play. But the expert or alternate version of the game is where one of the players is also a parasite. Or at least could be a parasite. It plays out by the players are dealt identity cards as well. So you could be a parasite, and your goal is to get the other players to kill people. So your goal is I don't know if it's to get them to kill people. Basically, to not be found out, I guess. I think it's get the other group to kill people. But you can't do it. You can't kill real people, but you can get the real people to kill other real people.
Well, you want them to kill the real people and not the parasites.
Exactly.
So.
Well, no, I think there was. We didn't really go over it too much. I'll plan on giving a full thorough review. The main review I want to do today, though, is of a game I picked up, and that's I Gut Tabletop Simulator. And man, if you guys have heard of Tabletop Simulator, you need to get it. If you've got a PC, it's a great game. It's, I think, like $10 on Steam. At the time of the sale, it was like $8 for me. I think to buy it at a full price, I think it's $15. And you're basically getting any game you could conceive someone make, and you can get it for free. There are some companies that will make their own games, like that... that guy we spoke to from Stellar Armada, I don't remember his name, he put a thing out on Twitter saying that he put his game up on Stellar Armada. The day I heard that, I went and downloaded it. I now have Stellar Armada. I have not played it yet, but I'd like to. I have it. I have the game. I haven't taken a look at what assets he put into the game, but to tell you what the game actually is, it's just a 3D rendering of whatever game table the game requires, and all the assets the game would normally have. In most cases, dice, cards, miniatures, painted or otherwise. Games I've played on it thus far have been mostly Uno.
Uno's great.
Uno is so good.
I played Uno on New Year's Eve.
It worked out. It was the first game I played because it's the easiest game to pick up. You know how to play it with everybody. I finally played Codenames, which I thought was great. But we've reviewed Codenames before, I'm pretty sure. So I'm going with the rules of that. The way that does work, though, is that there are channels you can put your voice chat into. And so the people with the people giving the code names are regulated to those channels so they can't cheat. Like, so you can never communicate with them. As soon as you sit in a certain seat, no one else can hear you. Everyone sits in a seat. The game does have ways where, like, you can't cheat. But you can. You can, but you can't cheat. It becomes very obvious that you're cheating to everybody else, unless you're really quick at it. There's a space on the table in front of you. Because, like, you're free hovering over a table. You can look at it from any angle you want. But you have your own seat. And once you take a seat, you have your zone. Your zone is your basically where things would be considered in your hand. And if you take any cards that would have any information, anytime you flip them over, they appear blank to everybody else. So you could have all of your cards in front of you in your hand and flipped over, and other people can't see it. However, if, like has happened to me, I've accidentally went, oh yeah, this card, and you're supposed to play it face down, you then move that card out, it's now view. As soon as it leaves that area, it's immediately viewable to everybody else. It's a very cool system. It's very much a simulator in that there's no... It's not like... Have you ever played online poker?
Yeah.
It's not that. That's what I was expecting it to be. I was expecting it to be like, click button to draw cards. No, it's literally you have to drag your mouse over to the deck of cards and draw one card at a time. Or, as I've later learned, that there are shortcuts where if you hold your mouse over the deck of cards and press the number of cards you wish to draw, it will then draw those number of cards.
I've heard it's more of a sandbox kind of system where, you know, you can basically make anything happen in it.
Yep.
It's not very polished. Like,
not
if
at all.
I download an app version of a game,
exactly,
this is just that game.
Like the game I know we've all played, which is not Ticket to Ride. I always get them confused. Cult Express.
Yes.
I ended up picking that up on Play Store, where that is like an animated version of the game. Everything is like nice and easy to do. There are scripted games that if you find them, if you get this game, look for any game that says scripted. If it's scripted, that means that someone with knowledge of coding has gone into the game and made it so that way the game plays easier, where like you just click on the deck and it will draw your card. It'll make it so no other players can play during your turn, because that is one thing that can happen. You can lose track of whose turn it is and someone can go twice or can skip you, which has happened. Great. I know it's not an actual board game, but it's a great way to play board games. The game I played a lot on there that I hope to play more of, and I would like to get an actual copy to play with you guys, or unless you guys just get Tabletop Simulator, you can play with me because I have it, was Welcome to the Dungeon.
Yes, I've heard of this game.
I don't know if we've reviewed that on the show before.
I think it's by Yellow. I've never played it, so no, we haven't reviewed it.
The point of Enter the Dungeon is like a card game version of Munchkin, kind of. But it's more of a game.
Interesting, because Munchkin is a card game.
That's a bad description. The best way to I'll explain it the way it was explained to me. It's Munchkin meets Chicken.
Okay.
Okay.
You at the beginning of the round, you choose what type of character you want to go into the dungeon as. Each character you choose has a starting number of equipment that give them a certain number of hit points. And abilities, like a magic spear that slays a dragon. The dragon is the most powerful character in all of the cards that you can be put into the dungeon. A cape of invisibility for the thief. A bunch of spells for the wizard, or the mage, rather. And like a shield and a sword that can kill any character that the knight, that the paladin, like, declares at the beginning of his journey through the dungeon, as long as he names it. Like, I name this creature, I want it killed whenever I see it. But basically the way this works is you then choose that character, whichever person's turn it is. They start, they choose, and then you take turns drawing cards and then placing those cards either into the dungeon or taking equipment away from the adventurer. And what these cards are, the cards are obstacles that I'll run into in the dungeon. They're all creatures, vampires and things like that. Some that are very easy to defeat, but each character has a specific item type that defeats them. So you have, like, fire items will defeat certain characters. Sword items will defeat certain characters. Some items are needed to defeat a character just flat out. Like, the magic spear is needed to kill the dragon. If you take that away and the dragon's in there, you are going to lose to the dragon. Or at least you're going to lose a good amount of your points, of your hit points. So the goal is to either make the dungeon so you can go through it, or the better way to go about it would be to make someone else go into the dungeon so that they die. If you go through the dungeon twice and lose, you fail. So basically everyone puts their cards in, taking one turn at a time, but you don't want to overstay your welcome, because if someone says they're out and you're the last person in, you go into the dungeon. So it's not like, I'll go into this dungeon. No, it's I'm going to put this into the dungeon. And then you pass to somebody else. Now they put something into the dungeon. But then the person after them says, no, I'm staying. And if you're next, no, I'm out. And they basically you fold. And the next person folds. That third person now has to go into the dungeon. Hope that they make it through to get the treasure. If they make it through twice, they win. If they die twice, they're out. So you win by either going through twice or being the last person standing. Which is usually how every time.
So it's a pressure luck game with that.
Yes.
Like, all right.
It's.
That sounds fun.
Who's,
that does sound really cool, actually, yeah.
How much are we willing to play with this?
I just imagine this, like, you know, thematically, you're all standing outside this dungeon and talking about what's in there and, like, trying to egg one person to go through.
Yeah, right.
Like, oh, yeah, yeah. I heard there's a dragon in there. And then, oh, yeah, yeah, and I heard it breathes fire.
Oh, I could take out a dragon, yeah, but could you do it without your armor? I could totally do it without
yeah,
my
yeah,
armor.
Absolutely.
Meanwhile, there's one guy in the back just going, yeah, I'm out of this, guys. You guys are
my God.
Dragon armor. No, I'm going home.
It was fun, and the group of people that I played with were nice. They taught me the game, because we all know Walter struggles with rules. But this one I picked up pretty quickly.
And it's actually in your profile for the website.
Oh, I'm sure it is. Do we have a website?
We don't.
But that was both Tabletop Simulator and
BoardWithFriends.com/WaltChat.
Now I need to get BoardWithFriends.com and create a WaltChat page.
I wonder if there's a BoardWithFriends.com.
We don't need to know.
I don't need to know. While you go on and talk about something else.
Well, quick thing, because I remembered something I played on New Year's Eve, which I thought was hilarious. And so always been Cards Against Humanity. Everybody's played it a million times. It's tired. Everybody is like, ooh, you know, whatever. People are generally tired of the game.
Yes.
My friend's wife for Christmas bought him the green expansion. Like, it's an official expansion pack from the actual people who made the game.
The greener, meaner box or something?
It just looked like the normal box, but there was a little green sticker on it.
Oh, okay.
It was the raunchiest, most ridiculous stuff I have ever seen printed on a piece of paper that was sold to somebody.
Interesting.
It reinvigorated how hilarious that game truly is when you're just, like, sitting around eating and drinking with people who generally, you know, wouldn't play a lot of games. And I just want to put that out there.
That is the type of game that does require regular updates if you play it too much.
All right. On that note, we'll get a rules breakdown of our review episode and come back. Or a review game.
Zach here to give you the rules of Venom Assault from Spyglass Games. Venom Assault is a deck-building game. In it, each player is going to take on the role of Freedom Squadron, and their goal is to stop the evil organization of Venom from taking over the world. Before the game starts, the players are going to choose a mission to go on. This mission is a scenario that dictates any changes to the basic setup of the game. There are 7 locations on the board. Each location is a Venom stronghold, and a Venom leader is chosen at random to guard that location. Underneath each Venom leader will be a reward card. You don't know what it is, but it's always helpful. Next, you take this Freedom Squadron deck and the Venom Support deck and place them in their respective positions. A first player is chosen as the commander of the team. During the commander's turn, there's an event phase that happens. Only the commander will perform this phase. the event phase, you take an event card from the deck, and this changes the rules for the round of play. After all players have gone, that event card is usually discarded, and the commander's next turn will begin another event phase, and a new card will be drawn. Each player then draws 5 cards from their starting deck. Their deck starts with recruits and commandos, relatively weak cards, but they are used to buy better cards out of the recruitment area. After you purchase your cards, they go into your discard pile. If your deck ever runs out, your discard pile gets reshuffled and those new cards will be available to you as you draw more cards. Now we enter the tactical phase. This is where you choose a Venom Leader that you want to go after. The Venom Leader has certain stats that are going to determine how many support cards he has and what special abilities might augment the game. You're going to choose a commander from the cards that you played earlier in the recruitment phase. This commander has an attack value that's going to determine how many dice you start with when you attack that Venom Leader. Your other cards are used as support cards. Their abilities are written down at the bottom of the card. These support abilities will augment your abilities during the game, whether it's dice rolls, adding more dice, or changing fails to successes. The Venom Leader you've chosen to go after also has support abilities. During the tactical phase, Venom support cards are going to come out, and these cards are going to help the Venom Leader. They may remove some of your cards from the game, they may make some of your successes turn into fails, so it's going to change the effect and the outcome of the game. A Venom Leader's health and defense are determined at this point in the game. So if a Venom Leader has a health of 4 and a defense of 5, you must hit a Venom Leader 5 or higher 4 times in order to defeat them. Once you defeat a Venom Leader, you take his card as a reward, and underneath it is a reward card. This reward card will always be helpful, and sometimes it is even part of the scenario objective. Finally, you enter the retirement phase of the game. At the end of combat, if you determine that one of your soldiers should be retired, you can move it to the retirement pool. This clears out weaker cards from your deck and allows the stronger cards a better chance of coming out. Once you complete your turn, refill the recruitment area and clear any Venom support characters from the board, so that the next player can take their turn. That's a quick breakdown of Venom Assault from Spyglass Games. There's a lot of nuances to this game, as each mission can change exactly how it is played and what happens in the game. The basic mechanics are all the same across the board, however. So let's get back to the rest of the friends and see what we all think of Venom Assault from the Spyglass Games.
And we're back talking about Venom Assault from Spyglass Games.
You know what? I feel like this is the first time in a long time everybody on the podcast has the same opinion about the game we're playing. And I don't just mean that – I'm not saying that just because you don't like anything, Walt.
You just said because I didn't like Rogue One.
Yeah, I'm going to. All right, we're not even going to get into that right now. But no. But it's a lot of times when there's three or four of us doing the podcast, it's kind of like, oh, it was okay. Oh, I really liked it. Man, not for me. But like, we all have pretty similar
that's
opinions.
Good too. Yeah. I mean, before we get really into the review of this game, I do want to say that we actually got to interview the guys at Spyglass Games. So if anyone wants to go back and listen to that, I will put a link to it in the show notes. But it was in our first Spotlight episode. So it was kind of a learning experience for us because it was the first time we actually interviewed anybody. But it was fun because you get to learn more about the actual development of the game. So this was a really exciting game to receive because it was one, we backed it on Kickstarter. We got to interview these guys and we anticipated it all year round. And it arrived around mid-December. And also, this is the first review game that we've done that at least myself and Walt Chad have played multiple times. So it's not our first impressions, but you get to play it for the first time tonight.
Yeah.
So we get to hear your first impressions of the game as well, which is pretty cool.
Down.
So before we get into the actual gameplay, what did you guys think of the the product? It was a Kickstarter game. What you actually got to see, the quality of the game.
So I've played a couple of deck building games, and I did. When you told me it was a deck-building game, then you actually took, a board out of there and, started setting up, a board with, counters and pieces and stuff, I was kind of confused because a lot of times when you're playing a lot of, Dominion or the DC game or some other deck-building games, you're just putting stuff all over the table and you have to kind of just, do it yourself. So at first I was a little bit confused. I was like, why the heck is there a board? We don't need a board. But then there are a lot of piles.
Yes.
And there's a lot of different areas, and then all the different areas you're fighting in and stuff like that. So I actually appreciated that there was an actual board to put stuff on.
Mm-hmm.
The art on the cards was – I liked it. It was cool. Obviously, I like this just this the total spoof on all the G.I. Joes and all these other different pop culture references that we got.
The game itself is it's a love letter to G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
And, I mean, art along with the components are – I think the art is what sells that. You know, it was definitely parody, and it definitely – you know, you look at those things and it just screamed like 80s TV commercial for, you know, Hasbro toys, basically. You know, there was a lot of different vehicles and the characters, and it was just cool to look at, I feel.
It was just missing Mask.
Yeah, we needed some Mask.
Mask!
They made a comeback, actually.
Mask! But no, it was, I liked it a lot, and then I wasn't on the episode where the two of you interviewed them, but I was on the one before it when we were talking about kickstarting it and then how we were going to interview the guys.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, looking at the Kickstarter and the very basic, like, box art and stuff that was already up there, then to actually see the finished product and play the game, it was cool. I liked it. I liked the presentation of the game.
Yeah.
I completely agree. It does feel like the game could exist without the board, but it would be... You would have to keep things organized yourself.
It'd be a big mess.
Like, it would kind of be a mess. Like, you could just have the... And plus, you would miss out on the zones.
Hmm. Yeah.
Like, well, the zones are what you make you need the board.
Yeah, there's seven... there's a whole map of the world there, and there's seven locations on the planet, basically, where the Venom leaders have strongholds that you're attacking.
And each zone has a topographical feature that plays to certain hands. Like, certain characters... Like, what was it? Sharkbite has a water. He has to be.
He has to be at the
he
water.
He has to be placed in water.
Forget that guy. Who's a jerk?
And he has, like, abilities that are useful in water. Which is kind of neat because not every character has that. Some characters just, by luck, if they're in that zone where, like, if they're on land, they have an ability to, like, negate any vehicles that you might have as support.
Yeah, there was a lot of them. It was like, okay, if they're in the Arctic, it does this. We're like, oh, thank goodness they're in the ocean.
It's baffling to me. Like, I don't know why this game had such a hard time getting... because they had a hard time getting it made.
I think it took two tries on
and
Kickstarter.
That's unfortunate. I think, like, I think if Hasbro had actually seen what they had planned... This would be perfect for G.I. Like, this is just... If this just had G.I. Joe, it would be amazing.
Well, I mean, I was thinking about that this morning, you know, when we were getting ready to do this episode and what I wanted to say about this game. And looking at it with the artwork and the mechanics and the actual just... It's a real gamer's game. It's not like a mass market kind of game. It's a hobby game. And it would have been amazing as G.I. Joe. Mm-hmm. I definitely agree with you with that. But at the same time, looking at the characters that they've created, you know, a lot of them are obviously parody of existing G.I. Joe characters. But, you know, they've developed a whole world, and I kind of want to see what else they would do with it. You know, now they have their own IP, basically.
Yeah.
You know, they could create other games in this universe of Freedom Squadron and Venom Assault.
Yeah.
Or Venom, I should say.
Venom!
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, they could make a, you know, a tactical miniatures game with Freedom Squadron, you know, take Not Sergeant Slaughter, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Sergeant Slaughter.
Corporal Carnage. They called him Corporal Carnage.
Did they ever explain why they could get... I thought they got Sergeant Slaughter's permission. Was it they got permission to his likeness, but not his name?
Well, they couldn't use his name, I think they said, because... They couldn't do his move because that was copyrighted by the WWE, and they didn't use his name because they didn't want to mess with G.I. Joe. So they did Corporal Carnage with his likeness because he let them do that because he was doing something cool. And he was. That card is one of the best cards in the game.
Dude, like ripping apart two Androids in one.
While punching someone else. It was great.
Yeah. Smoking a cigar the entire time. Yeah, the art is good. It's not terrific, but it's good. It's good.
I think it's really good.
I'm nitpicking the art in that, like, there are just... I don't know. I'm a comic book reader, so art has to, like... Everyone's more looks like they're posing versus they're actually doing something. Do you know what I mean? I don't know if I'm going to be – I'm such a nitpicker. I'm so sorry because, like, I do genuinely really love this game. But I have this thing with art where, like, if art doesn't look as if it's moving, I don't really – I can't get into it
as
much.
I get what you're saying, but at the same time, like, because of what this game is supposed to be, I think the art represents more like box art.
Yeah.
From
okay.
toys.
Yeah. No,
and I like that.
Yeah. Well, it's like when, you know, you have your Corporal Carnage action figure and you look at the back or the little card that comes with him on the inside that tells you his little bio, it would just be him posing.
Yeah.
Or there's another character, Hardcore. I don't think you got to see that card come
no.
out.
No.
I wonder.
He was amazing because he's just lighting a cigar while walking away from an explosion. And it's so cliche,
that's cool.
How
but it's
cool.
amazing.
Picture, there's just one suggestion. I wish I had known like I was going to like this game. I would have made this suggestion to them earlier. Just remember how like the old Transformer toys used to come with that little terribly drawn design that almost looked nothing like the toy? You remember that? It was like
well, the original box art?
The original box art for yeah. G.I. Joe and Transformers. Imagine if the art on the cards was
that.
Just that. That would be cool.
If they had done like retro, really
where
retro
art. It looked
art.
Exactly
yeah.
like that old timey
look. I mean,
because everyone was like kind of like popping off the box kind of look, you know what I mean? That would be cool.
That looks cool, but I think that would get annoying after a while with the amount of cards that are in this game. I like what they did.
Yeah.
I think... Everybody, you know, has some personality to them. They may not be – it looks like they're posing in some – maybe to you. I thought – basically, I just think they look
the
like
one,
a lot of personality.
It's the one negative I have for that and, like, you know, I think even you said, like, the cardstock was kind of cheap. But
yeah, the cardstock, that was the one thing. If I had to really nitpick on the actual component quality, I feel like the cards are a little thin. They're starting to bow a little bit already. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I could just easily sleeve these cards. So
yeah.
that would solve that problem easily. Yeah.
I guess one other thing I would have liked them to do is on the event cards, I wish that those actually had pictures on them.
More artwork.
Yeah, because you have this artwork of these characters. I want to see them in different scenarios.
Hmm.
Like, these scenarios that you read are cool and all. I just want to see them.
Yeah, there's a lot
give
of
me,
flavor
like, a
text.
Hint. Give me a hint, you know? I like that. Great villains. I liked the abilities. Seemed nice. The actual events themselves, by the way, straight out of G.I. Joe.
Oh,
like,
yes.
Just the campiest, silliest nonsense.
But
like,
it's fun, silly. Like it's
like,
not
right down to weather control. There's one where they're trying to resurrect dinosaurs, and they mess something up, and I'm like, this is. Genius! This is so good.
It
like,
was good.
I had to turn to Zach because I didn't watch a lot of G.I. Joe. I'm like, did this actually happen in G.I. Joe?
I can't say yes or no. I don't remember.
All of it probably
definitely
did
happen. At some point. Like there was one in the game that we played tonight where it was, you know, they had giant worms that were eating the vehicles. Like they were,
yeah.
The worms were burrowing underground underneath Freedom
worms.
Squadron base. Yeah, basically, and they were attracted to the motors of the vehicles, so they were eating all the vehicles. Like it was just. Outrageous
That's
stuff.
That's great stuff. And, like, it's not like, you know, if you read modern G.I. Joe, it's a little more serious. And
a lot more
like,
serious. This was, like, definitely 80s cheese,
yeah, this
but
is
good stuff.
A pre-9/11 war is real to kids kind of thing. You know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, and I like it. I really dug it. And I can't fathom, like, I just wish Hasbro had given them the license to Joe. Because, I mean, that, A, it would have made people, like, just shell out for this game. Because G.I. Joe fans... If you like G.I. Joe, this is G.I. Joe. Like, my buddy John is a G.I. Joe fan, and when I told him I had a G.I. Joe game, he was in until I told him it wasn't G.I. Joe, and then he goes, well, I want nothing to do with it then. He's like, it's not G.I. Joe. And I'm like, that's so unfortunate that he's like, no, Joe is the deal breaker. If it's G.I. Joe, it is. I'm like, no, but it's essentially G.I. Joe. And he goes, I don't care. It's not G.I. Joe. It's someone trying to be G.I. Joe. And I'm like, but it's still G.I. Joe. Like, it's hard to explain, but I'm like, ah!
I get it.
Just play the damn game.
So, now let's get into the actual game. I mean, it's a deck builder. That part of it is pretty much well known at this point, I feel, yeah. in the gaming communities. I mean, you use the cheaper cards to buy
the
better cards.
First deck builder I ever played.
You use cheaper cards to buy better cards, and you put them in your discard pile, and then they get shuffled in, and you get better cards. That's the basic style of this game.
Yeah.
What they changed, I kind of really like. I mean, they added a random element with those dice. Frustrating as heck.
Yeah, I was,
when you can't roll.
I didn't do anything until the very last, like the roll that would determine if we won or not. I did literally nothing that entire game. We played for like an hour and a half for that campaign. I accomplished literally zero.
But you had fun doing it.
No, right? It was fun, but it was like, all right, here we go. Time to attack. Oh, never mind.
You basically, you were in the role that I was in the first game that we played when it was three of us when we tried playing it, and I kept rolling garbage, basically,
yeah.
Like every single time. I think at one point I rolled 9 dice and all of them failed in one move. Yeah. It was extremely frustrating.
It was the second game we played.
Yeah.
Where you couldn't roll.
I couldn't roll for squat. I was rolling Will Wheaton in that game. It was awful.
It was awful.
But it was fun. Like, you're just like, how is this statistically possible that I'm getting this bad?
On the opposite end of the spectrum, I was just...
You were rolling like a boss.
I was cleaning up. Kind of like I did tonight. Like, I am very lucky with this game.
Yeah.
And that has nothing to do with how I enjoy
it. I did better this game, I feel. Like, I defeated three of the leaders, I think.
I set the bar very low.
You
was
did,
very
yes.
Difficult.
Thank or you, Sean. I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's cool. You know, I'm here.
One thing I like about it is that it, you know, the one of the twists that they did is there are different missions. Hmm. So the game has a lot of variability to it, you know. We played the first mission. I don't remember what it was, but it was basically the weather device. Like, you had to find 4 reward cards that were, you know, pertain to that. But, you know, tonight we played the Robots in the Skies mission, which, mm-hmm. you know, I wanted to play it. That's why I chose that one, yeah. Because it's, you know, the
You're
only Transformer. Yeah. We'll go there.
What a board game podcast. Why did I say that?
But basically, I mean... these different missions, like now I've played 4 different missions now, and I think you've played 3 and you've played 1, but all of them have a little bit of a different feel. Like one of them, we were looking for the scientist.
That
who,
was good. I
and it kept
that
moving
one.
Around. That was really cool.
Because it got harder, because as he moved, he took his, the people.
The Venom
basically
leaders
the way
who were
was,
defending
like, the Venom
him
leaders moved. Defending him would be like, all right, well, now they know he's at this facility. Let's move and take him to another facility.
Mm-hmm.
And all it did was just add to the number of Venom leaders on the board, and it was just awful.
It made it harder and harder. Yeah. I think we won that one, though. Didn't we?
Oh, yeah, eventually. Yeah.
Took a while.
It took a lot of rewards from us, too, because all the rewards kept going with him.
Mm-hmm.
So it denied us a whole bunch of good rewards. That could have helped us get that ending much quicker.
But those missions, like I'm eager to see what the other ones do now because they do change it a lot. You know, they change your strategy because you're not just going to these different 7 Venom facilities and just trying to beat the leader and you win. There's actually objectives in this game, which are, you know, add a level of depth that I wasn't expecting. When they originally were describing us, this game was just like, okay, it's a deck builder. You beat the Venom leaders. You win.
Mm.
Fantastic. No, there's actually objectives that you have to score and, you know, finish, which is really cool. The cards, though, like when you're drafting these cards and you really have to read them and the support abilities that they have, because there's some really cool combinations that you can come up with. I feel like that is probably my favorite part of this game is, you know, one of them, I can't remember the character's name, but basically he doubles the ability of any vehicles that you had, which I loved collecting all the different vehicles. And when you cut a combo like that out, it was a lot of fun. Like the, I think it's called the War Maker. Is that what it was?
He looked like...
that vehicle. That was probably my favorite vehicle in the game.
Yeah.
That was the best one.
Well, I can't remember the vehicle dude. It looked like Carl Weathers from Predator.
Yeah, a lot of them were modeled off of different actors and stuff like that. Anything else on the gameplay?
I liked it.
You liked it?
I play it more.
You wish you were more useful, I bet.
I wish I could have done a thing. I didn't do anything. That's fine, though. It was a lot of fun.
What about you, Walt?
I enjoy it. It's I had never played a deck builder before this, and the idea of it intimidated me. If you haven't, go back and listen to that interview. If you could see the look on my face as we're interviewing these guys, it was just a blank
stare. Well, they can't.
But... well, that's why I'm explaining it to them, smartass. It was just a blank stare of, what am I doing here? I have no idea what a deck builder is. Nothing like what they're saying makes sense to me. And then we started playing this game, and like I was dreading it up to that point because I'm like, oh man, this game's going to be so hard. I'm not going to understand. The only reason I was even interested is because it wasn't... I hate going into games that I don't understand and it being a competitive game. Because I feel so like outclassed by everybody and I'm super intimidated by it. With this, not the case. I was like, oh, okay. You know, I can at least take it easy on myself. Even if I do badly, you know, everyone else will pick up the slack. But it then turned out to be far easier. I was making it more difficult in my head, I think. It's very easy. You basically have a card. The card has value to it. that coupled that added with all your other cards tell you how many dice you have, and then you roll those dice to try to defeat the bad guy, who also has a number of like abilities that he has that'll
they have their own support number. Abilities, yeah. And they have their own Venom support cards that'll come out and change the situation.
I like it. I'm now interested in seeing like. I'm interested in seeing this DC deck builder or any other deck builder. I know there's a Dragon Ball Z deck builder on tabletop that I want to play now, and I know people have been playing it. I know there's a Star Wars one, and I'm eager to try these games now. Even though those I think are more competitive, it's or at least PvP. It's you against another player.
Mm-hmm.
I'm eager to see what those games are like now, having this experience. This is very I would call this game very entry level. Like you could. This could be your first deck builder. It was mine, and it cake.
I think it could start entry level, but it can also grow with you, too, because of those different missions. Like, from the first mission that we tried, that was very entry level. Like, there wasn't a lot of interesting things on top of the basic mechanics, but it was a learning scenario. But then you change that scenario to, like, the one where we had to find the scientist. Mm-hmm. Okay, now something more interesting is happening. Now it's a lot more intimidating. And then we add the robots in the skies scenario where we were, you know, searching for, you know, the objectives. But at the same time, they started the scenario, the meter up at 3, and you had to go back down to the other stages. And it was like a tug-of-war kind of thing going on because the basically Autobots and Decepticons were, you know, choosing sides between Venom and Freedom Squadron.
Yeah.
I don't remember what they called them in the game. It was like Beta Bots or something.
Was it Robotron and Robocon or something like that?
Might have been something like that.
Robotrons and Robocons.
Yeah. Totally not Autobot symbols on those chits.
Should just call them Autotrons and...
Autotrons and Decepticons.
Decepticrons.
I wanted artwork of them. I really did. Like, you know, when I was reading...
That's where those event cards could come in handy.
Well, when I read the event card for, I think it was called Rock and Roll, and I read the description, I'm like, that's Jazz. Like, I want to see their interpretation of him.
He comes in on a comet, and I'm like, that's the first thing in this game I don't like. They're referencing Michael Bay's movie.
Either way, it was still pretty cool.
Which has to... complete semi non sequitur.
Yeah, you're known for these.
I'm known for it. Yeah. All right. Fair enough. In hindsight, Michael Bay's Transformers not that bad a movie if you compare it to all the other crap he's done since.
Oh my goodness! Don't even get me started.
Like
on
you
that.
Go back and you watch Transformers.
Oh, the original Transformers. That was fine. I never problem with the first one.
Man, Starscream feels like a menace. Like just feels like. Something terrifying that...
But
because,
he didn't feel like Starscream. But anyway...
No, not at all. But
you're going to get me on a rant. We're not going to go there. Back to the game.
Why am I always the one that goes on rants?
Venom Assault, I think...
Take a swing at it.
I do have one complaint about this game.
Yeah?
It's... I played this game single player.
Yes.
And it is the exact same game. And I played it with three people now. You know, three player, and it's the exact same game. There's not a whole heck of a lot of actual player interaction in this game.
No.
Like, when you and I were playing it, Walt, the two times that we were playing it, we had my nephew over. He was on his phone the whole time until it was his turn.
Didn't really change my experience, though.
And then today, I'm not saying it makes the game worse, but today, Sean, I observed you were playing on your phone while waiting for your turn. Because there's not a whole heck of a lot of actual player interaction.
It's nothing. Also because I felt useless, so I wanted to be good at something.
But my problem with this is, when I think of a cooperative game, I wanted more player interaction. I wish there had been cards that we could have had in our hands to help each other out. Like I wish that was there.
There is very minor team play involved. Like when
there's strategy discussion. But that's when
El Guapo came out, his ability is he makes every other boss harder to face. By lowering your combat abilities. And there are two other characters whose names I do not remember because there's just too many names. There are just so many villains and there's so many good guys in this game. There really are so many.
Just like the source material.
yeah. I give them credit for coming up with all these names, by the way. That's props to them. But there are two characters. Who basically are they're like twins almost.
I remember who you're talking about. Yeah,
they're like one is a psychiatrist, the other's like one's like a psychiatrist, the other's a scientist, and like they when they're both out together, they form some kind of pact and make each other really.
They make
hard.
Each other stronger if they're on the board at the same time.
Lockdown and something else. I know one of them's Lockdown. I couldn't remember the other one's name, but anyway, Psych and Lockdown.
Sure.
Well, I think that's what it is. Psych Ward and Lockdown. That's it.
Yes.
Because both of them take hostages. But, like, apart from that, yeah, there's no reason. It's just, hey, everyone, go after this guy. Okay, so we're all going to go after that guy. Mm-hmm. We never needed to tell each other. It wasn't like Pandemic. Like, Pandemic felt more like
Pandemic, you have to strategize. So if you're the pilot, you're bringing the medic over here, but really we got to do this. And also just have Jesus walk through there and cure everybody. It's cool.
See, what I would have liked, though, is actual, like, I got my hand of five cards, and, you know, well, you get into a situation where you're trying to, you know, you don't have enough dice because of, you know, Venom support cards came out. You don't have enough dice to defeat the leader now. But I have a card that my support abilities say you could play this for me or I could play this for you. And if I played it on your hand, like your turn, I could give you an ability or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, I think that would have added another layer to this as a cooperative game. Because when I think G.I. Joe, I think of a squadron working together. I mean,
like, well, there are ways.
That is something that I wish this game had.
I also think that might be why a lot of deck building games are at least somewhat competitive, because it's a reason for you to pay attention to what everybody else is doing.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're all just on the same team and what you guys are doing doesn't really matter.
I mean,
not that it doesn't matter, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So it's.
There's also one little element where. I think you said it, you know, in the game, like you wish that, or maybe you had said it, well, I don't remember, but somebody said it where, okay, there's really no penalty for losing against the Venom
leader. There's none.
Yeah, nothing happens.
Just, and I read through that rule book.
It's just
I didn't see anything
it's
for
just
it.
Time, it's just time.
Okay,
time
you wasted some time.
Yeah.
And if anything, it benefited us, because one of the scenarios that, you know, came out was that it added extra Venom support cards. You had to put them face down on each of the seven locations.
Yeah, my initial...
So we just wasted stuff by going through and just pretending to fight them, basically.
Yeah, because my initial reaction to that is, oh, so we should maybe hold off until we're stronger and we can take these guys on. And then I thought, well, it doesn't hurt us to lose to them. I mean, it does some bosses hurt to lose against.
Some of
like
them do.
Like Psych Ward. If you lose to her or him, maybe, I don't remember... you lose one of your soldiers to the retirement pile. There need to be more negatives in the game.
Yeah. Do recall, going back to my other issue with it, in the interview that we had with Spyglass Games, they did mention that one of the stretch goals, I guess, was to have the Carnage Corpse, which were supposed to be cards that you could play on other people's turns.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a real shame that those weren't in this box. I think that would have helped this game a lot. It's already a good. It is a good game. I'm not complaining and saying it's a bad game. I just wish it had that element of cooperation, like more of it.
I think one thing that could have helped the game is if there was a home base that you had to start from, and if you went to a place similar to Pandemic, you had to work from there. Like, let's say I went to Australia and fought someone in Australia, but I lost. I'm now stuck in Australia and now have to get out of Australia, or someone else needs to come in, beat the guy, so I can then leave Australia.
Or, yeah, if there was a way that we could both be there and combine our forces or something.
And then you can only go on foot to one of the other few locations that are nearby, similar to Pandemic. Or there's maybe like a helicarrier or something that can come by, pick you up, and drop and bring you to other locations, but you have to wait for that thing to come to
so maybe the purchasing of different vehicles allowed you to give. Okay,
I feel that
now
vehicles should be something
support,
that's like
so I can fly and stuff.
Yeah,
like that
like we all buy as a team, because the vehicles are like, why would I just have vehicles? Like, I understand I have my own squad, but why do I have my own vehicles? Shouldn't we all have like we all part of the same team? Why don't we share this stuff?
Mm.
Well, that's why I'm getting back to it. I wish there was more of that element of, okay, we could swap cards. You know, maybe we could trade cards or play cards on each other's turn to help each other out. I mean, that is my biggest complaint about the game. But like I said, I'm by no means saying it's a bad game. It's a good, solid deck builder. I mm-hmm. think it's a good, solid entry as Spyglass's first, you know, release. Yep. And I definitely recommend it, especially for G.I. Joe fans. I like it for that. You know, it had the element of, you know, that it evoked that theme to me. I know it's not G.I. Joe, but
it is. It's though. Still. It really is G.I. Joe. Yeah.
They did a
My
good job with it.
My question to you guys then is, can people buy this game?
Yeah. I believe it's available on Miniature Market, and I know if you go to Spyglass's website, they have links to
okay,
it.
Okay, so they did manage to make more than just for the...
Yeah, I mean, every Kickstarter, when they do that, they make enough so that they can actually sell copies, too.
Okay, yeah, Miniature Market. Oh, it's cheap on Miniature Market. $33.
Oh, it's worth it for that. Absolutely.
Oh, wow.
That's...
I don't even want to get into how much I pledged on the Kickstarter.
it says it was originally $50.
It says
the point of the Kickstarter was to, you know, get them
you need to fund it. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, it says if backwards on Google, the backer edition was like $60.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know what's different than their mass release versus the actual Kickstarter version. I don't know if they had any actual exclusives. Maybe the mission card for Robots in the Skies, tokens for that.
Specific.
But, I mean, either way, it was. I think the game is, it's an excellent game. And it's the first game I have ever really endeavored to play solo. Like, I've played it solo and enjoyed it, and I'm going to continue to play it solo because it was a fun deck builder. But, I mean, as a cooperative game, that's just the one thing I wish that they had, was more interaction.
More cooperation.
So, Roundtable, would you recommend the game, Walt?
Absolutely. Especially if you can pick it up at Miniature Market, $33.99. Go for it. Won't regret it.
Sean, would you want to play it again?
I'd love to play it again.
Right now?
Not right now. I want to go. No, not now. In general, I would love to play it again. This very moment,
not so much.
I'm good.
I got to work in the morning. I'm tired. I'm sorry.
Absolutely. I definitely recommend the game. I think it's a good endeavor, a good first game from Spyglass. So that is our review of Venom Assault from Spyglass Games. Definite recommendation, especially if you like deck builders and if you're a G.I. Joe fan. Go check that out. Other than that, thanks for listening.
Bye.
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 That wraps up this episode of Board with Friends. If you have questions to ask, grievances to make, or comments to deliver, follow us on Twitter at Board with Friend, like us on Facebook, or just send us an email at boardwithfriends42@gmail.com. If you enjoyed this show, check out some other great podcasts like Talk Wrestle Talk or the Local Multiplayer Podcast. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Have you seen UHF?
No. What? Wait.
No, I've seen
Weird
it.
Al?
What's UHF? UHF? What?
Yeah. Weird Al movie.
I have not seen it.
Oh, you should watch it. You would like it.
I didn't know Weird Al had a movie.
He did. It was awful, but it's awful, like, funny.
Well, I mean, it's Weird Al. Yeah. Long, long time ago.
In the galaxy far away.
Naboo was under an attack.
In the Jedi, me and Qui-Gon
And I'd have thought me and Qui-Gon Jinn could let the Federation in on me.
Maybe
cutting them a little slack.
But their response,
it didn't thrill us. They locked the doors and tried to kill us. We escaped from that gas and met Jar Jar and Boss Nass. Took a bongo from the sea and went to see the queen. It all wound up on Tatooine. That's where we found this boy. All right, we can stop now.
Yay! Since this is not a Star Wars episode.
My, this here Anakin guy.
Maybe Vader someday later. Now he's just a small fry. And he left his home and kissed his mommy goodbye. Saying, soon I'm gonna be a Jedi. Soon I'm gonna be a Jedi.
Nice.
It's hard not to break into the next verse, but I'll stay.
Yeah, we should stop.
Copyright strike from Weird Al.